Committee on Ways and Means, Subcommittee on Public Safety. Colleagues, today is April 27th, 2015. We're convened for the purpose of a public hearing, continuation of a public hearing on SB 5514, the budget bill of the Oregon Judicial Department. Mr. Benatar, would you like to tee up the evening or the morning, the afternoon for whatever.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair and subcommittee members. Today, the Oregon Judicial Department is back to talk about one specific request in their budget, and that is for bond support for local courthouse capital construction projects. They are requesting that you provide Article 11 Q bonds to support construction projects for courthouses in Multnomah County, Jefferson County, Tillamook County, and Lane County. At the start of this meeting, we have Mr. Moon from OJD to discuss this request in broad details, and then the specific courthouses will be coming up to talk about more specifically what they are asking for in their projects.
Great, and we will go with OJD first, and then we'll go to the Tillamook County Courthouse presentation so that Senator Johnson can testify and get back to committee. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. My name is David Moon. I'm the Director of the Business and Fiscal Services Division at the Oregon Judicial Department. As LFO mentioned, I will be speaking briefly on the Oregon Courthouse Capital Construction and Improvement Fund to give an overview. This program was established in the legislative session in 2013. It uses 11 Q bonds as matching funds to courthouse replacement projects. The program requires that the Chief Justice, as well as the Department of Administrative Services, approve the projects. And the Chief Justice must make three particular findings: that the current courthouse has significant structural or other defects that threaten human health and safety, that replacing the courthouse is more cost-effective than remodeling, and that replacing the courthouse will provide opportunities for other state office co-location. Funding may be provided to certain levels depending on the amount of co-location. Without co-location, up to 25% of matching funds may be provided, and with state office co-location, up to 50%. The counties make their funding requests through the Oregon Judicial Department, and that's why we have prepared two policy option packages, numbers 303 and 304, to cover the debt service, cost of issuance, and bond approvals or bond authority. As mentioned, there are four projects that are being recommended or proposed for this coming biennium. The Multnomah County Courthouse project is expected to be completed in the year 2020 in the spring. Should cost between $250 and $260 million. The current request is $17.4 million in state bonds. This is down from our earmarked amount of $24.6 million. The Jefferson County Courthouse is expected to be completed during the coming biennium. This is a $15 million overall total project cost, and they are asking for their final $2.5 million in state bonding support. The Tillamook County Courthouse is estimated between approximately $16 million and $18 million. They are requesting $7.9 million in state bonds, as well as an additional almost $2.5 million in state funding. That part of the request is not in the Chief Justice recommended budget. And the Chief Justice has not officially made the requisite three findings nor approved the project. The Lane County Courthouse, a 2008 report estimated the replacement cost of that facility at $77 million. The request for state funding is $1.4 million. This will provide the county an opportunity to do some programming and other research and design to determine what the estimated cost of the replacement of the facility would actually be. And this project has also not been approved, nor the requisite findings made. This is the end of my overview, if the committee has questions for me. Otherwise, I would turn the time to invite the counties up for their individual projects.
Let's do it. Thank you very much. Let's bring up Tillamook County Courthouse first so that Senator Johnson can lead off, and why don't we just knock out the entire presentation.
Mr. Chair, it'd be easier just to tell her yes and she wouldn't get after us.
Thank you. In the interest of time, I'll begin while my colleagues join me. We are the poster child for the three findings. Significant structural defects. You'll hear from the experts about exactly.
Identifiers.
Oh, I'm sorry. For the record, Betsy Johnson, I represent Senate District 16 that includes Tillamook. You'll hear from the experts, Judge Trevino, County Manager Paul Levesque, and County Commissioner Mark Labhart. But certainly we would meet that criteria. Replacing it would be incredibly more expensive than building new, and the opportunity for co-location exists. I am the voice for rural counties, and again, while it doesn't necessarily show based on my district, a Redmond heart beats here. So Jefferson County also, I think, comes under that rubric of rural counties that significantly need help. So with that, I would turn it over to my colleagues and retire to my committee, but I commend this for your consideration. Our law library is underwater part of the time. Boxes are stacked on boxes. I'm surprised the fire marshal hasn't shut down the DA's office, and we plead for state assistance to help provide the kind of building to do justice in Tillamook County. And I'll leave it to my colleagues to make the rest of the case. Thank you for your courtesy in letting me speak first.
Thank you, Senator.
So, co-chairs, we're going to just switch chairs just for real quickly here. For the record, I'm Mark Labhart, and I have the privilege of being a Tillamook County Commissioner. I'm in my 11th year in Tillamook County. I'd like to introduce our presiding judge, Mari Trevino, who closed her court today to be here. Of course, she has a full docket, but she saw it was important to her to be here to show her support for this project. I think if I could ask you to talk about your letter that you'd like to, you have a copy of a letter that the two circuit court judges provided to you, and maybe we could just summarize the letter real quickly to show support from the state level.
Certainly. Does everyone have the letter? Was that part of the submission? Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay. I don't have a lot to add to it. I think the best way to appreciate
identify,
how...
Identify yourself.
Oh, I'm sorry. Mari Trevino. I'm Chief Judge for Tillamook County. Is to actually look at Mr. Labhart's pictures, because as they say, pictures paint a better picture. So I think the pictures alone, when you see, for example, one of our courtrooms, if we were in this courtroom now and we were doing an in-custody jury trial, maybe somebody on trial for rape or some serious ballot measure 11, the jurors would literally be from me to Commissioner Labhart from the defendant. That's how small our courtroom is. So, and I think he's got some pictures, and I'll turn that over to him. Does anyone have any questions about anything in my letter?
No. Okay, thank you. I'll move right in, members. And I'm just going to give you a short PowerPoint presentation, and Chief of Staff Paul Levesque, Chief of Staff for Tillamook County, will talk about some of the financing. This is pretty much an overview of what the ask is, so you've got a copy of that. So what's the problem? If you look at the Tillamook County Courthouse from the outside, it looks pretty nice. It was erected in 1932. It's an 83-year-old building. We've had a 2008 7 years ago study from the Justice Department that found out that it's ranked 45th of the 48th courthouse in the state. In other words, it's the fourth worst courthouse in the state of Oregon. Here's some of the pictures that were taken. This is a crumbling, unenforced masonry foundation wall in the basement that holds up the building. Happens to be pretty close to where courtroom 108 is located. You can see partly why we're ranked fourth in the state. We are overdue for a subduction zone earthquake that likely just occurred in Nepal. That was a 7. We're due for a 9. Our courthouse will be flattened in an earthquake, I guarantee you, with this unreinforced masonry. Another example of just one of the bearing walls in our courthouse. This building, like many, will not be standing after a subduction zone earthquake. This is one of our circuit court rooms. We have two. This is 108. How would you like to be the juror sitting right here? This is one of our sheriff deputies. They have to look around the post there in order to see the two attorneys. So they have to lean forward the entire time at the testimony if they want to at least see the attorneys. This is the jury box. This is where the jurors sit. So how'd you like to be a
in a really severe case of maybe some potential violence that could happen and be sitting this close to a potential person that could cause harm, a witness or an inmate. Notice the cramped facilities for the clerk sits here, judge sits here, witness box here, and the attorneys sit next to each other. That's court in current violation of the standards for how far attorneys should be apart from each other. So they sit right next to each other in close proximity. So in reference to what have you done to look at this, we have, we meet monthly. We, I'm the liaison to the circuit court, and we meet monthly to talk about court security issues, and we've been meeting routinely to talk about how can we fix this problem in our court facilities. And we've been meeting for at least the 10 years of the 11 years I've been a county commissioner with consultants. We've hired consultants. We've looked at a variety of repairs. We've looked at remodeling. We've looked at adding on to the courthouse. We've looked at annexes. And we've found that most cost-effective option would be to construct new court facilities only, court facilities adjacent to our present jail and justice facility. This is our jail, and parole and probation, state police is also located there. So this would be the new court facility on county-owned property at the justice facility. So what problems? New state court facility would include three circuit courtrooms, the DA's, and the state police. So what's in it for the state? Why should you help us to provide these state court facilities? Most legal services would essentially be in one location. The courtroom would be adequate size now. No more transporting inmates 5 miles to go to court and walking inmates up and through the building past the public to go to the court facilities. Courtrooms would be safer for our judges, for our jurors, and for the public. We would again house state police and the DA. The building would not collapse in an earthquake. So that's the presentation. Now, Paula Vesco will briefly talk about some of the financing programs.
Chair.
Representative Krieger.
How long is the jail? When was it constructed?
Paul, do you have it?
19 years ago, Representative.
And what's your elevation above your normal floodplain? Now and then you get water in Tillamook.
Chairs, Representative Krieger, it is definitely out of the Snobby inundation zone and the floodplain both. It's well out of that. It's located out on the Port of Tillamook Bay property.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. All right. Yes, thank you, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Paul Levesque, Chief of Staff for Tillamook County. This is an $18 million project. We're seeking $7.8 million in Q11 bond money. Also, $2.4 million in crime fines. We are hoping to use the land value as part of our match, and the county is in the process of liquidating some surplus forest lands to provide the debt service that we will need for issuing full faith and credit bonds for our share of the obligation. As Commissioner Labhart mentioned, state police would be housed in this facility, thereby entitling us to 50% match. The we're issuing an RFP for the design work. We already own the property. Public facilities services are already available at the site. I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Questions? All right. Thank you very much for your presentation.
Thank you.
We appreciate it. Let's go back up to Multnomah County then on the agenda. Could we please bring forward Chair Kifori, Nan Waller, and J.D. Chams?
We don't all have that.
Cut those trees. How close they are the Tillamook Forest.
Chair Kifori, welcome to the committee.
Great, thank you. Thanks so much for having us today. Good afternoon, co-chairs and members of the committee. My name is Deborah Kifori, and I'm the chair of the board of Multnomah County Commissioners. Thank you for the opportunity to speak with you today about the Multnomah County Courthouse Project. We are here today, after 45 years and 29 studies, I may have missed a year or a study, to report on our progress to rebuild Oregon's largest and busiest courthouse. Many of you have had the opportunity to tour the building and have seen firsthand how urgent the need is to replace this unsafe and functionally obsolete courthouse. We have made tremendous progress since 2013 when, thanks to you and your colleagues in the legislature, we first partnered together to look at building a new courthouse. And you'll hear more about that from Judge Nan Waller and our project manager. But before that, I wanted to make a few points about why the state's investment in this project is so critical. Courthouses are one of the few places that the public is compelled by law to enter. And the vast majority of the employees who work in the Multnomah County Courthouse are state employees. More than 600,000 people enter the courthouse annually, including judges, court staff, and the thousands of people who use our building for court-related business every day. If a major earthquake were to hit our community, I think this is a common theme you're going to be hearing, and experts say it is only a matter of time, the courthouse will collapse. Exit paths will be blocked and citizens will be trapped inside. As we saw with the earthquake in Napa, California last year, even a small quake can create major operational challenges for a courthouse. In Multnomah County, the loss of our court function would be felt across the state. This courthouse handles 25% of the statewide caseload, which rises to 60% if you include parking citations, and it generates $66 million a biennium for the state's general fund. It also handles most state-level business litigation. The county contribution to this project is significant, and we are prepared to meet our financial obligations. In my current budget, which will be released next week, I have set aside approximately $28 million in one-time-only funds for the courthouse project, and I'm confident that my board of commissioners will continue to make this project our top capital priority. As a former state legislator, I understand the competing demands you face for the support of many worthy projects, and no decision is easy to make. But I believe the argument for the state's investment in courthouse projects is very compelling. The partnership between Multnomah County and the state has been critical in moving our project forward. We simply couldn't build this courthouse without your financial support. I want to thank the legislature and the Oregon Judicial Department for your strong support and partnership in this project. And I'm happy to answer any questions.
Good afternoon, co-chairs, members of the committee. My name is Nan Waller. Excuse me. I'm the presiding judge in Multnomah County. And I'm going to go quickly through my part because many of you have been in our courthouse and have done the tour, and you've seen my brick, which I did not bring down because of its heft in my back. Right? Our courthouse was built between 1909 and 1914. It was built in two pieces, which is part of its fragility. A front piece was built on the existing site, and then the U was built. And those two pieces are not joined in a way that will withstand the earth shaking. It is seven stories, 256,000 square feet. The current courthouse is right in downtown Portland, and the commissioners have not made any decisions yet about what will happen to it. It's on the National Register, but there will be continuous work done with the community and other stakeholders to decide on its future. And I must say that I have been impressed with the process that the county has gone through to get significant public input in this process. And so I have no doubt that they will go through that same process for disposition of our current courthouse. There are the bricks. Hollow, as I watched the news this weekend, as I'm sure all of you did, and I saw the brick buildings in Nepal and the tragedy that that country is going through, it was hard not to think about our own courthouse. It's simply not built for 21st century seismic standards, and it's not just a big earthquake, it is even a moderate earthquake. And when we look at what happened in Napa, this is their courthouse. It's still not being inhabited. It was a 6.0 earthquake, and it took out that big chunk. As you can see, the word justice over in the corner. And that courthouse is same kind of construction, still not in use. Beyond the seismic difficulties with our courthouse, as with many courthouses, they weren't built with the kind of security issues in mind that courts now have to face. So our small hallways There are victims, there are inmates, there are rival gangs all waiting in very small hallways, and it's not a safe situation. We probably have enough coaxial cable in our courthouse that not only could we have our own museum of the history of coaxial cable, some say it's what's holding up the courthouse, and you can see an example here. You know, this frightens me every time I look at it, and there are little instructions on some of these boards as to this we think isn't working, but it might actually affect something else, so leave it alone. We have a significant caseload in our court, not only for our community, but really also on a statewide basis. As the chair indicated, 189,000 regular case filings plus 242,000 parking violations a year. We bring in excess of $66 million to the state general fund every biennium, and the cost of operating this is much, much lower than that. And again, if you have any questions for me, I'd be very happy to answer them.
Thank you, Judge Waller. My name is J.D. Deschamps. I am the project manager for the courthouse, and I'm sure you all saw my name when trying to figure out how to pronounce it. And it's always a guess. One of the biggest goals for this courthouse is to build a new safe courthouse with the problems from the wiring, seismic, safe transport of prisoners. So the building will be built to the newest and current seismic standards. We will incorporate all of the best practices for security, which I have a graphic that will show you one of the things we'll be doing. And one of the things we run into, which you probably run into in this building, is there's just not the room for people to meet in small meeting areas just to have a quick one-on-one in a safe, quiet place. This will be a 100-year-old building. The last one lasted 100 years and has another five to go. And it'll make it through the next five. But then the next one will be there for another 100 years. A couple of weeks ago, the County Board of Commissioners selected a site. And as the judge pointed out, it's the first time that they selected a site since 1864. So it's been a while, 151 years, but we do have a site. It's at the end of the Hawthorne Bridgehead. It's on county-owned land, and it's a great site. It's close to the Justice Center, close to the current courthouse, so it will work really well for the community, and it's a great site to put the courthouse.
Representative Gorsuch.
In terms of that location, will you be able to construct a connecting tunnel to the Justice Center so that transport of prisoners could be below the surface?
We have started evaluating that, and we're waiting to hire our architect and contractor so that they can proof that out and see the feasibility. Mm-hmm. We've had some conversations with the city about doing that.
Thank you.
I do have a couple of views just to show how the building will fit within the skyline of Portland. It's a significant building. It will be an important building in the community, and we will do everything to make sure that it provides the prominence that it needs, but is also a fiscally responsible building. It's something that, well, you can look at it, you could see that it's important. It won't be gold-plated or anything like that. It will also be appropriate in height to the buildings around the area. This is another view looking in the other direction. We are building it in an L shape. That has come up as a concern, but we actually, before we had selected a site, when we met with the judiciary and the lawyers and the DAs, one of the things that got brought up is they wanted a courthouse that had a lot of natural light. And when you are square, you have areas that kind of don't have that opportunity. So we've laid a later concept out that will have a lot of natural light into the building. We'll also have a grand entrance opportunity when we get into final design that will allow for protection from the rain, which we occasionally get in Portland, but not today. This is one of the slides that I think is important to highlight. We will have a Sallyport entrance, and the Sallyport will allow for the in-custody defendants that are in a bus to be brought in. The door is closed on either side. They will then disembark, enter into the in-custody elevators, and go to holding below grade. What we currently do is an elevator rises out of the street on 5th. They are escorted out, down a flight of stairs, and into the courthouse. It is not only dangerous for them in a gang situation, but very dangerous for the sheriff's deputies that have to protect them and the public
and
at the same time.
And Fifth Avenue.
Oh, Fifth. Thank you.
Right.
I'm focused on the new courthouse. This one kind of highlights a little bit of the safety separation. So the orange is where we will have the separation. So that is always the in-custody defendant area. The green are the public areas, and then the yellow is secure areas. In this option, we have the judges' chambers on the same floor of the courthouses, but there is separation. So we have always focused on 21st century standards and separation of the public from the secure areas. As Chair Kefouri pointed out, this is a building that houses a lot of the judges and employees that are state employees. 85% of the employees in the new courthouse will be state employees, and the 95 when you discount the security from the sheriff's department, which are county employees but are providing security and holding for the state function for the court. Chair Kefouri also pointed out our funding. So as of right now, the county has $50 million committed to the project. So we've been doing our working on the project for the last couple of years using county funds in advance of getting any money from the state. In 2013, the biennium, when the money was approved by the legislature, the $15 million, what we will be using that money for is to finalize site selection and acquisition of adjacent property. Our architect firm did some reference design, the slides that I showed you earlier. We did geotechnical and environmental investigations so that we could evaluate the risk on the site and make sure there was no unknown risks that we were unaware of. Once we select an architect, they will start by doing their schematic design. We'll select a contractor. They will do pre-construction services. There is a little bit of utility relocation on the site, but it's the same as almost any site. And then we would also be doing some shoring design so that we could dig the foundation out for beginning the construction of the project and then just management of the project. Our 15-17 biennium request will include the final geotechnical analysis and design, the final architectural, structural, mechanical, electrical design, and continuing work with the contractor to price in the project. Permitting and system development charges from the City of Portland, if you've been reading the news, we have about $8 million for that item alone. It's a little pricey. And then also a few other foundation and early work packages to keep the project moving. The quicker we can build the project on a five-year project, the more money we can save because we get away from inflation costs. One of the things that has come up is, how did you price the project? And so we had our owner's rep team take a look at other courthouses, 26 courthouses built in the last couple of years, so that we could evaluate what their cost data is. And then we adjusted it for the time frame, inflation, and also for building it in Portland. So we now have a good feel for what it will cost to build this project. Our $250 million, the question often becomes, what are you spending the money on? And I think the one item to note is that we've put in 20% of a risk contingency. The one thing I can understand that you don't want is us coming and asking for more money. So we're managing the risk, we're aware of the risk, we've got a number in here for that. And my goal is to come back and say, I don't need it all. It's my hope. This slide, just one little thing that you might find interesting to look at. This is our shoring design or shoring concept. So when we're talking shoring, it's when you dig a hole to make sure it doesn't collapse. This is just sort of one of the shoring systems that we're looking at. We have issued the request for proposals for the architect at the end 2 weeks ago. We'll issue the one for the contractor on this Friday. They will be under contract by July. We will start design, begin construction in 2016, be done with construction in 2019, and open in 2020 or sooner. Any questions?
Representative Gorsuch.
In terms of the design, recently they completely gutted out and redid the federal building and put a lot of environmental changes and updates in that. Will this have some of those sorts of features?
This will be a LEED Gold building, okay. And I think there will LEED Platinum. And so a lot of the contractors that will be bidding this job, I know one of them did that, and a lot of they all chased that project. So we will be, I always like to steal from other people as best I can.
Thank Representative you, Krieger.
Do you already know the square foot capacity that you're going to build compared to what you got now?
It's about 50% larger.
And how's that? Now, what does that do for your projected growth needs in the future?
So we projected the growth between 10 and 20%, and it did vary depending on which group it was, because we didn't want to add extra growth in areas that weren't expected to grow. So we have growth capacity.
And Representative Krieger, sorry, just to add something. In 2012, we opened up a courthouse in East County that has potential for growth there as well. It might be less expensive to grow our court at that facility, so we'll be weighing that as time. Okay.
And just one last thing. You showed a fluorescent yellow. Please tell me that's not going to be the color.
No.
You don't like that color? Representative Wisnant.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you for coming by and giving me a preview this morning. That helped. Seven floors is the current building. How many floors will this be? And did you look at any going up any higher? What's the limitation in Portland on stories?
So we're currently, it's about a 14-story building. This site, we're looking at a 250-foot tall building at the moment, but we're allowed to go to 325 on this site.
Man. Just for comment, I was just in New York City last December, and the big real estate product they're selling in New York City is air to go up. Mm-hmm. If you have a two-story, they'll sell you the air to go up.
Maybe that could be in our funding formula. Senator Bates.
Yeah, we got a lot of air in that.
Package the hot air around here.
We'll be selling the water. Yeah. A couple of questions. This is supposed to be a finance committee here, Ways and Means. So we have record low interest rates right now. They're not likely to be there in 2020. Have you calculated in what that means by not funding or selling bonds immediately and holding them versus waiting until 2020 to do it? That's the first question. Second question is, this is probably, I assume, a 30-year bonding issue of that nature. Assuming a rate of 4 or 5%, have you calculated what you think the annual cost of the state would be if we do 50% and you do 50%? This is a $250 million, a $250 million bond we're talking about. That's going to suck up a lot of bonding that we have in the state. So what's that look like financially for the state in 2020?
I guess we're all looking at me.
Sure, I'll try to take that one, Senator Bates. We are talking right now with our CFO about selling bonds now for the future because the interest rate is so low. I can't answer your question about total cost. I don't have those numbers in front of me, but I'm happy to get back to you with whatever information we can provide.
Mr. Chair, I just think it's wise to be strategic. I know we have a lot of limitations on bonding, both legal and otherwise, but we have some historic things going on financially right now that are not going to stay in place very long, I don't believe. And it would be wise to kind of think outside the box here a bit for projects this big.
Mr. Bender, is there anything you wanted to add to that?
I do, Mr. Co-Chair, have some information. I'm trying to get it. I didn't bring a printed copy with me, so okay. If you could give me a minute to get back to that. And move
absolutely.
On.
Any other questions for this panel? Well, thank you very much. We appreciate your testimony.
Thank you.
So let's bring up the Jefferson County Courthouse team, Mike Ahern, Amy Bunkowski, and Jeff Rasmussen. Welcome to the committee.
Okay, I'll start. Co-Chair Williamson, Co-Chair Shields, members of the committee. My name is Amy Bonkowski. I'm the trial court administrator for Jefferson County Circuit Court. I support Jefferson County's request for the $2.5 million to finish the 50% match. I also want to apologize that none of our judges could be here today. I did provide a letter from them. And so as their spokesman today, just very briefly, a little history. About 10 years ago, Jefferson County started planning for a new courthouse by routinely setting aside funds for it, by scheduling meetings with the public to determine the best site, and working with architects on programming and space needs. Both retired Judge Nielsen and myself then attended a course through the National Center for State Courts regarding the best practices for courthouse construction and design. And the reason we did that was because we wanted to ensure that if we ever did get to build a courthouse, that it would be done right, that it would be durable, efficient, safe, and secure. I don't want to one-up everybody that went before me, but maybe just a little bit. We do meet the seismic criteria, but in our county, just as an example, last winter we had a really bad windstorm one night. The next morning we came in, and the court offices are on the second floor of the courthouse, and we couldn't enter our offices. The building had shifted so much just from the wind that we had to have maintenance come over and shave off three sides of the doors just for us to open the doors and get in. So that's a little concerning. When we heard the reports before about seismic, it was like, yeah, okay. But then when that happened, it was like, oh, that's not good. After spending all of those years getting public input and working with architects, I'm really happy to say that last Saturday, just 2 days ago, we broke ground on the courthouse that we've been designing. Our design is modest, it's durable, it's energy efficient, and it includes the provisions of safety and security for occupants and visitors of the building, such as one secure entrance and separate circulation paths for the prisoners, public, and private. This building is possible because of the dedication and commitment of the Jefferson County Commission, the citizens of Jefferson County, and the opportunity for the state match. So as a trial court administrator, I join the three judges in our district in supporting Jefferson County's request for the $2.5 million to complete the 50% match. Thank you. Any questions?
Keep going.
Thank you, Amy. And I'm one of the three commissioners, Commissioner Mike Ahern, and I want to introduce, we have May Houston and Wayne Fording, the other two commissioners. And Jeff is here as the county administrative staff, so, and we have a show to give you. But the point is that what I think is exciting is you see what you get what you see with this one. We are way down the path. And breaking ground yesterday, Saturday, was great fun. We've worked very hard on this. We built a really nice county jail in 1998-99. We paid for that, and before we got it paid off, we were thinking we have got to get this courthouse done. So much like Amy spoke of, it needs to happen, and it is going to happen. So what we're asking for, of course, is $6.5 million from the state. The county is committed. Just so you know, we are committed to the $4 million, but we need the $6.5 million. That without it, our debt every year is $500,000, $500,000. And our total general fund coming in is only $5 million, so that's 10% of our money coming in. So our population, like you see, is 23,000. We are projected to grow significantly. Remember, we're just north of Deschutes County, so you probably heard about them. Just by accident, we're going to be growing a lot, and we can feel it. We want to grow right and smart. So our tax rate is one of the highest in the state. We pay our way in Jefferson County, yet we are a lower-income county. Manufacturing and farming, etc. We are low per capita income and low values. Beautiful sites, isn't it, of the county here. Payment in lieu of taxes is one of the lower ones, and our secure rural schools is very nice to have, but it is not as significant as many states are. And Cook County is our other neighboring county that we like to compare to, similar size as us. So basically, we need the money so desperately because that not even in the budget is demolishing our old courthouse. Amy characterized it real well. One of the things that the roof of the building is not tied in well to the walls, so they feel like in a seismic activity, it'll probably pancake. Very, very unsafe. We were lucky to buy a pretty decent building at a good price right across the street from the new courthouse to house our parole and probation and juvenile departments, which is going to make this very efficient. We will simply have the DA and victims assistance in our new courthouse.
And a state agency.
Anyhow,
We are AA rated. The 30-year payment, like I mentioned earlier, is $500,000. And we did get in here. We are committed. We are out on our bond. So we did grab this because we also felt like it was kind of now or never. We had to move. So we bit off this big bite. But this is pictures of our old courthouse. I call it communist style. I was raised in this town, so when I was a little kid, I didn't think it was quite so bad. But the more I've been around, it is as bad as it looks. It's very unsafe. In the floodway, we've worked on it. Unfortunately, some of the commissions in the past spent quite a bit of money putting elevators in and doing what they could. But, you know, they had to do what they had to do. Because the public has chosen, you know, we built the jail first, and then we moved on the courthouse. Our courthouse is, like I said, only two courtrooms. We definitely need three. Where there's no good separation from the in custody and the public. Very unsafe. My brother's a presiding judge, and he complains about the lack of privacy. Like, he'll be in the restroom, and somebody just convicted's parents will be in there with him. So very, very important to make a change. Here's the history, our chronology, how we moved ahead. Amy went over a lot of this, been working with the state. The city of Madras was gracious. They were right next to there. They have a very nice functional city hall that was just put up a couple years ago. We will steal off their courtyard. They have a beautiful entry. You'll be able to see it from Highway 97, the courthouse, and it'll be facing the highway. So it's a nice balance. Like I say, we're moving ahead. We only got the $4 million. We absolutely have to have the rest. We've shaved it down somewhat. We think it's okay size, but we have cut some corners already. We've been wrestling with this. But we have our architect, we have our builder, and we have got our final price determined. That's how it lies out. Like I was saying, Highway 97 would be 4th Street over here. So you'll be able to see it facing east, very, very functional. We built it for future growth. We bought a little bit of property from the school district. You won't come in behind. We'll be able to grow to the south very easily. So we're construction starts today. They're out there working on the ground. So this is a very timely meeting. In August 16, we will be moving in. So, and there is a rendition of approximately how it will look. Safe. Functional. There's some pictures of it, some wood, some stone. Basalt's big in Jefferson County, so outside, especially we're going to use some of the natural basalt. This is the separation. You've got the in custody in the red, the DA's office in the blue, and the public in the rest there. Then it's the courtrooms, the three courtrooms, the court offices on the bottom of the page. Public in the front facing east, and the court the jury rooms on the side and the three court judges' offices. And it's meant to flip really. This is our Sallyport system with the elevator coming up. We can flip that and recreate that when we add the other fourth courtroom. So it's designed for growth, but some people say 30, I mean as many as 50 years. I think we're good for a while. We're proud of it. We're hoping you guys have some questions. It's been a long journey. We've been here. And really, it would put our county in real poor shape if we didn't get the $2.5 million. It's just incredible. We didn't think we had much choice. I still support our choice, but we need the extra to make it work.
Question. Representative Wisnett.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. This is my number one priority. I'm sorry, Multnomah County. Especially since Senator Johnson is not in the room right now.
It's safe.
She gave an endorsement. Commissioner, we're going to go from 2 to 4?
2 to 3.
Two to three.
It's easy to build the fourth one. We started planning for 4, but that's kind of when we decided, you know, what can we really do? Yeah, and Amy and them were the first one that stepped up and said, we had better just build 3.
Because doesn't the prison impact your workload to extent? And if we open that completely up, Deer Ridge, is that going to mean
more?
It does for court filings, but as far as court hearings, it does to an extent. We would use our third courtroom. Those hearings are usually heard by a judge sitting here in Salem, and we do the recording from our courthouse. So it does to an extent, yes.
But and committee, the mattresses, I think their growth is going to increase tremendously. They're doing their, I just went down to the city hall, and it's going to be, this courtroom's going to be modeled after that same sort of design. It looks really sharp, and transportation's improved downtown in Madras, and I think as the whole Central Oregon area expands, it's going to go out to Jefferson County, too. So it's really a big need. Glad to support it.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Borsak.
And just to go back, you were talking about the impact if you didn't get the money from the state. Did you say that was 10% of the county's budget?
The general tax, like the property taxes, comes in right at $5 million. So I like the comparison. We're spending 10% of what we collect in property taxes to pay for a courthouse. Okay. It just shows the significant commitment for a lower-income county.
Thank you. Thank you.
Any other questions? Go ahead. Oh, Senator Bates.
Just real quick. First, I appreciate you're asking for less than 50% of the cost. Number two, that you're thinking ahead and getting a low interest rate. And the third question, though, is what's your population expected to do in the next 30 years? Because if your population expands significantly, that cost for against your annual budget is going to drop dramatically.
We hope so. We hope it connotes over to increasing tax base. I mean, we need to, as a challenge to our county, we just need to get our incomes up so the value of our homes is up and more industry to tax instead of just simple population. But our population, this is a real recent study, has it going up this number.
You have a new industrial park out near the airport that's bringing in some.
And then.
Yeah. That should cut their cost by almost 50% if that actually happens, but that's a long ways out too.
We also have significant income from the PGE project and the natural gas lines through the community, mm-hmm. through our county, and without those, we would drop even more significant.
And is Google out there or Facebook?
Crook County.
Crook and Deschutes really do well. What's wrong with you guys?
Oh, we're doing better.
We got golf courses, you don't. It's not fair, you know.
Jeff Rasmus, I'm the county administrative officer. I'm only here if you have questions and to push page up or down.
PowerPoint, whatever. All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Lane County. Whoever wants to start, just remember to say your name for the record.
Good afternoon, co-chairs Shields and Williamson and members of the committee. My name is Jay Bozovich, and I am the chair of the Lane County Board of Commissioners. And thank you for having this opportunity to speak to you about our courthouse facilities. Our courthouse is 57 years old this year, and like most of them in this state, is in drastic need of some upgrade. You know, there are many different services that the state and the county provide together, and I think court facilities is just one of those examples. And it's been a great partnership over the years. And I think one of the things that's kind of, with our proposal, it's a little bit different, is there's also a partnership that's going on between the City of Eugene and Lane County in looking at this facility. And it's one of the reasons why Lane County is asking for funding for engineering work and additional studies, because we haven't exactly settled on a location for the new court facility, and we are doing that in conjunction with the City of Eugene to make sure that we are doing this in a way that will be acceptable to the public. As you know, downtown Eugene can be a pretty controversial place to locate a new building of any kind, and we want to make sure that goes smoothly, and also how it fits into their desire to have additional facilities for their farmers market, room for their public square that they use for their Saturday market, how it all fits together in the city. And that's part of what we're doing in this proposal. With me today are our presiding judge, Karsten Rasmussen, our trial court administrator, Liz Rambo, and our capital projects manager, Brian Craner. And I'm going to turn it over to Liz next, and she'll talk about some of the issues that she's seeing as a trial court administrator, and then Brian will walk you through the actual facility and some of the problems there. But, you know, just in my own touring of this facility a couple years ago when I became a new commissioner, I can't tell you the security issues that are involved in this facility. Right now, our inmate or transport, our Sally Gate is in one building, and the actual courthouse is in another, and they have to walk across a sky bridge to get between buildings. We've had to put up a set of curtains so the public can't see us transporting prisoners, and that all started during the media scrum for the Kip Kinkle trial. So we kind of refer to them as the Kip Kinkle Memorial Curtains. That's kind of the level of how not thought out as a modern court facility this 57-year-old facility is. It's not just structural issues. It's that you have to squeeze. They literally have to yell ahead in the hallways to tell people to leave the hallways as they move an inmate because it's not wide enough for two people to pass. In the back access to the north courtrooms, the south courtrooms, you have to walk the accused past through the lobby to get to the courtroom, past the victims that are there to testify. It's really an insecure facility and not adequate for modern day standards. So I think what we're requesting is a logical progression in funding. You know, it will allow us to do the necessary planning and be ready for the following biennium for construction and those bonds. So with that, I'll turn it over to Liz to talk a little bit about, you know, her views on the process, and then Brian will follow up with what the facility actually looks like.
Good afternoon, Co-Chairs Williamson and Shields and members of the committee. Thank you for having me today. My name is Liz Rambo. I'm the trial court administrator from Lane County Circuit Court. I want to say, first of all, that it has been a great pleasure to work with the county so far on this project. I believe that the approach they're taking is extremely thoughtful and very well planned out. We've recently begun to work through a study with the National Center for State Courts, and Brian will go into that a little bit more in his discussion. But that just demonstrates their commitment to the project and their commitment to being very mindful and very deliberate in the planning process, which puts, I think, a great deal of certainty in the outcome that may not otherwise be there. A lot of the problems that we're facing are very similar to the other courthouses. We were in the overflow, but we could hear a few of the problems that you were hearing from the other courts are the same ones that we have. There are seismic issues. Mostly, there are also just major mechanical issues as well, hazardous materials, you name it. We've got the gamut in that older building. But as the commissioner was mentioning, some of our major issues are really around building security. And there are many. The ones that the commissioner mentioned, also just the way that the judges proceed into the building is through an open air tunnel from which there's no security at all, and a person could jump down into the tunnel at any time. It's really not secure at all. And then through a public lobby. The inmates use the same elevator to come in and out of the building as the judges do and walk through the same hallways in the back past staff desks to get to the courtroom. So many of the issues are exactly the same as you've heard. One of the special challenges I think that we face in Lane and that makes the need for a new building pretty pronounced is the fact that those security issues also directly interact with accessibility issues. Our building is not accessible. So, for instance, if you're a juror, you have to go outside of the secure perimeter to come to jury assembly. Then you have to do this very circuitous route through the building, up one set of elevators, outside the building to a ramp to get accessible access to the front side of the building, and then in through security, and then up another set of elevators to the main lobby. And then if your trial that you're going to doesn't happen to be on that main floor, then you take another set of elevators up to the other floors of the building. And all of that is because our building
not accessible in any way to people with any kind of disability without going through that completely crazy route. Excuse me, and it's one of the things we like to do when we take people's tours of our buildings and show them how the jurors come up. So I think that is probably all I have to add to the other comments that you've heard here. Unless you have some questions for me, I'm happy to answer. And with that, I will turn it over to Brian Craner.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Co-Chair Shields, Co-Chair Williamson, members of the committee. I want to give you a brief rundown of the scale of our current courthouse, the work we have ahead of us, and our objectives and timelines associated with that. Looking at our current courthouse, it was originally constructed in 1958. It originally housed the majority of the county functions, so you could go get your building permits, pay your taxes, et cetera, there. But over time, as the courts grew, it's morphed into primarily a justice function with our sheriff's office and our district attorney there as well. So a number of the courthouses, courtrooms reflect kind of this remodeled nature of fitting them in where we could, if you will, and it's very evident when you go there. The courthouse receives about 600 daily visitors, and in 2013, it distributed over $8.1 million in penalties, fees, and restitution, and it $7.1 million of that went to the state. In terms of the courthouse staffing, there's 265 employees that report there on a given day, and there's some occupancy by floor I included, including basement level, which allows storage and records. First floor had our sheriff's office, and that is our primary sheriff's office, including their admin records, dispatch, 911 call center, et cetera. That is their primary office in our courthouse, so something we're taking a close look at because there's certainly shortcomings associated with the facility that impacts them as well. And then you go up to the second, third, and fourth floor. That's where our courtrooms are, including the district attorney's office on the fourth floor. First and foremost, we want to address the three criteria by which a project becomes eligible for funding through the Capital Construction Fund. There's the structural defects, seismic vulnerability, replacement favored over remodel, and then the opportunity for co-locating state offices. We address those in our application to the Chief Justice. We have a 1997 seismic study that identified the courthouse as being weak and brittle and very vulnerable under seismic load. The building does not satisfy basic life safety requirements of the building code. When it comes to remodel and replacement, we've done a number of studies, the most detailed of which was in 2005, where we tried to see what it would take to squeeze another 20 years out of it. Not ideal, but how do we make those baseline modifications to meet minimum standards? That was estimated at a $45 million project, would be closer to $55 million today. And so in 2009, a stakeholder group that we convened looked at all the information and concluded that a new courthouse was the optimal solution. And finally, on co-location, we have been beginning discussions with a lot of the state offices in the Eugene area where that have employees that visit the courts regularly, and providing them with facilities to make their operations more efficient, conference space, workstations, kind of war room, if you will, for some of the Department of Justice offices. And so we're starting to identify those potential co-locations. So we think we're in good shape with regard to those criteria. I won't get into these in great detail. Commissioner Bozovich and Liz did a great job of identifying some of our probably most famous or infamous shortcomings. But certainly it's a list that you're familiar with after the last three presentations. We've got, you know, a good collection of asbestos. We've got ADA noncompliance with significant architectural barriers. We're seismically vulnerable. We're unable to accommodate any growth of any significance. And when we do try to find solutions for the accessibility issues, the security issues, time and time again, we find we're constricted by the footprint of the building. It's bound by city streets on two sides and structures on the others. So some of these solutions just aren't physically feasible. And to make them physically feasible, then you start talking about a lot of dollars. Of course, the building systems are aging and inefficient as well. So that leads us to a list of what we want to accomplish with the new project. And again, I don't need to get into these in great detail, but as we look at the effort ahead of us, the process ahead of us, we're going to be keying in on things like energy efficiency, technology, all the best practices you'd expect to see out of a project. So as we contemplate and form this concept, there's certainly a number of objectives we want to make sure we're successfully meeting or achieving. So what are some of the work we have underway? We have executed a contract with the National Center for State Courts. They have visited us on site twice, and they're coming next week. They've gotten a lot of data from us, individual interviews, questionnaires, to really start identifying what sort of facility is needed to meet the court's needs. They're going to develop a long-term court development profile so that we're certain, with some certainty, we're building a facility that's going to accommodate us for the next 40, 50, 60 years and not something that we're going to outgrow in the near term. They're going to create functional space standards that are going to serve for the baseline of the design that will follow. So really looking critically at what sort of standards we need to adopt to make the building best serve us. And then they're going to come up with a space program where we can look at those co-locations, who needs to be next to who needs to be at the new courthouse, and really develop that courthouse concept that's best going to serve us. In the meantime, as Commissioner Bozovich alluded to, we're developing a lot of local support, not only within the county and within the courts, but also with the city, because this is such a prominent fixture in the downtown area. Mm-hmm. So the need for funding assistance in 2015-17, the work that we have ahead of us is the facility programming I mentioned, evaluation of potential sites, design development, construction budgeting, and all the other kind of ancillary services that go with getting this thing construction ready. We budgeted that work at $2.8 million, so our funding request is for $1.4 million. That assumes the 50% match and that we're going to identify that state office to co-locate with us. We plan on matching the funding in this biennium out of our capital fund. We have the resources to do that, so that won't require anything beyond budgeting for it out of our current capital fund reserve. And then we'd anticipate a request for construction funding in 17-19 after we get all our work done on the design. So when it comes to the timeline goals, 15-17, we've got a number of tasks ahead of us to get us construction ready. And then 17-19 would be bringing that financing plan together, commencing construction, and then 19-21 would be open in our new courthouse. So there's my rundown for you, and I'm open to any questions. This is Liz and I, like, we've got photos of the previous courthouse just to show we know how to do it right. this last one. Yeah, we have some unfortunate pictures of this beautiful brick building getting torn down as the new, you know, aluminum edifice went up right next door. And so we vowed to never make a similar mistake again. So, yeah.
All right. Any questions? Thank you very much. Senator Bates.
What's your bill rate for the county?
Bill rate as in what?
Mill rate.
$1.28 per thousand assessed value, plus we have a 55 cent per thousand assessed value sheriff's levy.
So you're pretty low.
Yeah. We are a timber dependent ONC county.
We're like Jackson County, move on. We're at 350.
Okay. All right. Anything else? Thank you very much for your testimony. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Mr. Bender, anything else for the good of the order?
Well, on this particular item, Senator Bates's question about the cost to the state for authorizing bonds for these projects, I do regretfully indicate I couldn't get to that from this particular laptop, but I can get that information back to you tomorrow. You're coming back for OJD's phase two tomorrow, and I'll have that for you there.
It may not be a huge amount, it can spread over 30 years, but I'd like to tell you what it looks like.
Oh, no, I will definitely get that information for you.
Important for us to know.
I believe otherwise that, unless there are any more questions, that would complete the public hearing today on Senate Bill 5514, but you do have one more item, which is an informational meeting on the local court report.
Okay. Then I will hand that up to you, and you can tell us where we need to proceed.
Okay.
A lot of pages.
Yeah.
Well,
there is a copy of the local court report that has been uploaded to OLIS, and it is 100 pages. I've got a summary here, though, that has, oh, I'm sorry, that's the wrong, I don't think that's going to be enough. Here, let me give you a couple extras.
Need one more. Well, we've all read it already, the 100 pages.
I did my own summary.
That's a good one. Thank you, everyone.
What I have handed out to you, and if for people who don't have a copy and are following this, looking at the OLIS item, it's the report. It's just pages 1 through 3, and then pages 12 and 73. Page 12 is a summary for municipal courts, and page 73 is the summary for the justice courts. The reason for this report is LFO is directed by statute to provide Ways and Means with summary data on municipal and justice courts each biennium. And this is the summary that we're providing. This is based on a request that was put out to cities and counties for information on their municipal and justice courts last year. And in this particular case, we've summarized some of the data here. I would like to point out some of the information that we received back. For the 2014 local court report, we limited, LFO limited the request to caseload, fines, and information on caseloads, fines, and revenue distributions. We requested the data for the 2012-13 and the 2013-14 fiscal years. We received information back from 59 municipal courts and from 26 justice courts. Now, the Oregon Judicial Department maintains a registry of municipal and justice courts in the state. That registry is part of the report as Appendix A. If you look at the full report, I didn't make a copy of that here. And that indicates or identifies 180 local courts in the state, including 145 municipal courts and 35 justice courts.
Mr. Bender, why such a low percentage return, 41%?
We do know that OJD's registry does not indicate which of these courts are active in the sense that they're actually having cases during the particular fiscal years. So we don't know, for example, how many of the 145 municipal courts that are listed in the registry are actually operating. But we did only receive, we asked the League of Oregon Cities to get data for, to compile data for LFO on municipal courts, and they provided information on 59 of them. So that is only 41% of the courts that are in the registry.
So, Mr. Bender, do we need to update the registry? Is that the problem, or
no, I believe that some of the courts are not replying.
Okay.
That's not Thunder Courthouse.
For the justice courts, LFO received data on 26 justice courts, which would represent 74% of the total 35 that are listed in the OJD registry. But we did get additional information from the counties that actually the registry for OJD on justice courts includes courts that don't operate, and that the 26 justice courts who did provide responses represents the full and complete set of justice courts. We don't have that. I don't have that indicated here in this particular memo, but I will revise that to indicate that the justice court response rate turned out to be 100%.
Good.
That's good.
Now, given the information that we have, I've included two tables in this paper handout for you. The first one, which is labeled page 12, shows the total for the 59 municipal courts that replied, and the totals on page 73 show the 26 justice courts that replied. What you can see is we asked for information on number of cases filed by the categories that are indicated there, civil, traffic, other violations, misdemeanors, and basically anything else. We asked for information on the fines that were being imposed for different categories of offenses. We asked for the revenues that were being collected under number 4. The difference could be, of course, a fine could be imposed 1 year, and it could either not be collected or collected in a subsequent year, but we wanted to see the money that was coming in. And then rows 5 through 8 shows basically where the revenues that are being collected by the local courts are being distributed. Some of the information that we found is that, first of all, looking at the municipal courts, of the 59 municipal courts that did reply, we did not receive data in comparable data from those 59. Municipal courts are operating varied data systems. They have other various systems that they're using to compile their data. And we were unable to provide summary totals, really, or to get true summary totals of the municipal court data because of variations in how municipal courts are categorizing the information that they're collecting. And we did not have information to readjust or recategorize what they had sent in.
Mr. Bender, can I ask you a question? On line 5 of municipal courts, if we only have 49% reporting, is the distribution to the state from those 49%, or is that 100% of what the state received?
This is what they are reporting, okay, as they reported it. So this is what the municipal courts reported distributing to the state, which you could see was about $6 million 1 year and $5 million the next.
Do we have a way to capture 100%? I mean, does it go into a certain fund, or is it in a certain place? I'd be interested to see what the difference is between what has been sent to us and what has been reported.
These revenues are collected or sent to the Department of Revenue. They are the collecting agency for these.
I would assume they all go into some similarly situated account.
What these revenues go into are the criminal fine account. Mm-hmm. The criminal fine account is a separate account that you've established to receive criminal fine revenues from both the local courts and from the circuit courts. And the criminal fine account revenues are used to support a number of public safety programs, and any revenues that are not needed for those programs accrue to the general fund. So for budgeting purposes, we view these as general fund revenues.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Bender, maybe some of you on Judiciary might know the answer to this. This might be more of a policy question, but I had heard that you don't even need to be a lawyer in order to be a judge in a municipal court proceeding. Have you guys heard that issue?
That is true.
That seems
Representative
very
Nathanson
troubling to me.
Has introduced a bill with some adjustments in that. I don't remember the bill number, but yes.
In Scappoose, we had a barber who was a municipal judge, and there was a case, without going into details, where...
Had enough of your barber bashing.
Yeah. Where the lawyer said, "But Your Honor, that case, the Supreme Court has said that's allowable," and he said, "Mr. So-and-so, you're not in the Supreme Court today. You're in Scappoose, guilty."
Oh, my goodness.
So maybe it would have been helpful if you'd have
maybe we could
water.
Take some of that DOJ money.
They got some education programs that are available to them, and now they have to complete them within 12 months.
They either have to have a JD or an alternative certificate.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah, that stunned me when I heard that. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Bender. Please continue.
Going back to looking now at the municipal courts, again, if you look at page 12, municipal courts are reporting, the ones that did report, are reporting a significant number of case filings that they're handling. Altogether, the case filings were almost $159,000 in the 2012-13 fiscal year, and over 164,000 cases in 2013-14. Approximately 77% of the reported cases were for traffic violations the first year. That dropped to 66% the second year. But clearly, the vast majority of the great majority of their cases as being reported are for traffic violations. Very few civil cases are reported. As you can see, there was 172 one year and 168 the second year. But the courts do handle some civil cases. And misdemeanor or criminal cases, you can see the numbers there, if you're looking at row 2D, are quite substantial at over 14,000 and over 13,000. However, even though I'm showing these numbers, we know they're not accurate because there was a situation where the Eugene Municipal Court combined ordination violations with misdemeanors and were unable to separate them out, but that was where they placed them in the report. So,
they were all captured as misdemeanors?
All of them, yes. And we don't know really how many of those truly were. Going on to the justice courts were better able to report comparable data. And they provided a summary to LFO of the data, and that is shown on page 73, the totals. All but three of the justice courts are using the same system to record their caseload and financial data. It's called the MAGIC software system. And because of this, we do have comparable data from the justice courts throughout the state. The justice courts reported filings of approximately 140,000 or a little more cases in total each year. Again, if this would be complete, this would compare to a number of closer to 160,000 for the municipal courts that did report. So together, the justice courts are not handling as many cases as the municipal courts, but they have a significant number of cases that they do handle. They're even more focused on traffic violations than the municipal courts reported. About 87% cases were for traffic violations. They do handle significantly more civil cases than the municipal courts do, averaging about 5,500 civil cases each year. And the misdemeanor cases, they do handle number of misdemeanors to about 1,320 the first year and 1,527 the second year. So these courts do have a misdemeanor caseload that they are processing. We then looked at the revenues that they're collecting and where the money is going. Local courts basically the distribution of local court fine collections is governed by state statute. And the way that it works is, beginning in 2012, local courts were required to pay or to deposit the first $60 that they collected on any fine into the criminal fine account. And then the amounts that were collected above that were distributed based on certain factors. If it were the case that a state law enforcement officer was the person who cited the offense and that was taken into a local court, then in addition to the $60, half of the fine amount collected was also added to the criminal fine account. The other half was kept by the jurisdiction or was distributed to the jurisdiction that was operating the courts. When there were local law enforcement officers who had cited the violation or crime, in those cases, after the $60 was deposited to the criminal fine account, the remainder was basically split between the county, the jurisdiction that was operating the court, and the jurisdiction that had the citing officer, which could have been the same in both cases. In that case, they would get everything over the $60. In 2013, you changed this. Some of the local courts argued that the $60 requirement of $60 payment to the state represented too high a level, and you reduced that to $45, so only the first $45 went to the criminal.
Silly of us.
Only the first $45 was distributed to the criminal fine account. However, local courts were then required to transfer the last $16 of the collection. If the fine was imposed was fully collected, only if it was fully collected, the last $16 must be distributed to the county for certain identified purposes, not for unrestricted funding. And those purposes are funding jails and drug and alcohol programs, and also county court security programs or county court security funding. If we look again here at the summary, I just wanted to point out a few things. I'm looking at page 3 of this report under summary, which you may want to look back at some point. But just looking at the level of activity that's been reported, realizing that this is not a complete report, we see that if we combine justice and municipal courts, that violation cases that the local courts handled totaled about $279,000 in one of the 2 years and about $260,000 in the other year. So we're looking at a caseload of at least $260,000 over this period on average. If you're interested, we didn't ask OJD to report their violation caseloads for purposes of this report, but OJD does report violations. They report their caseloads. They report their caseloads on calendar year basis, not fiscal year basis. But what they are reporting is that they're, at the same period of time, the courts were handling about 215 or 211,000 violations per year. So clearly, more of these violations are being handled by the local courts than are being handled, being processed by the circuit courts.
Mr. Bender, I don't know if this is the correct data set for this question, but have we ever done an analysis of the average average number of cases of violations per the percentage of the population, I guess. What I'm wondering is if we have any outliers of a local jurisdictional court that may be using this process as a way to ensure that they have a sufficient budget, I guess. I know it's a criticism that has come up in other areas of the country, and I just don't know how we would ever get at that, and I don't know if this is a data set where we could see some local jurisdiction is an outlier using this system more often than other jurisdictions. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay. Without impugning anyone.
As part of this report, we did not address the type of questions that you're asking here. I would note, though, that in the full report, which is on OLIS and can be printed out, we have data from each individual court. And clearly, the activity levels vary a lot from one court to another, though we've made no attempt to evaluate those levels. But you can see here, for any of the courts that that did report back, exactly what they did report.
Okay. So. Thank you for answering my very inarticulate question.
Mr. Ben.
Yes.
It would appear, looking at this, that the traffic courts are supporting the rest of the court system, probably. You know, the traffic courts are the major amount of violations, the major amount of money come in. Reading this is from traffic, right? Traffic violations.
Yes.
Land justice, both, is that correct?
I'm sorry. The fines imposed, if you look, for example, on these tables, in the municipal courts, those are all dollar amounts. So if you look at row 3B, you can see, for example, the fines that were imposed for traffic violations versus the fines that were imposed for other violations or misdemeanors. And yes, most of the money fines that are being imposed in both the municipal courts and the justice courts are for traffic violations.
And we're talking about funding courthouses for the next 100 years. In 15 years, when we're driving smart cars, this all money all goes away. I mean, this is not theoretical. It's probably going to happen. I think down the line here a little bit.
I'm sure I'll still be getting tickets even with smart cars.
Yeah, well, I might be surprised. I'm just wondering, and how much of the space in those buildings is taken up by traffic courts?
I do want to clarify. I can't answer that, but I do want to clarify that the courthouse projects that were being presented and requested through OJD would be to house circuit courts, which are the state's OJD courts. Generally, the justice courts and the municipal courts meet in different facilities.
Pretty sweet.
All right.
I could go on a little bit more, but in case you have any questions, let me know. I know we're coming to the end of your meeting here.
Did anything jump out at you?
What was
surprising, Mr. Bender?
I do believe what I would point out is that the responses from the municipal courts in terms of the data that was available and provided was disappointing. We would hope that municipal courts would be able to improve their responsiveness and the accuracy of their reporting later on as time goes by. I also need to note that LFO, this is the second time we've asked for data from the courts. The data from judicial, from the justice courts, quality improved greatly. Municipal courts, we didn't see that level of improvement. And we did not, LFO did not specifically go back to the municipal courts and justice courts prior to the second request to get additional information as to what they might be able to provide and not. So it's possible that if we had done that, this is a shortcoming on my part, if we had done that, we perhaps could have changed the question somewhat in order to get better replies or more complete replies from municipal courts. However, but we were just asking for, you know, basic caseload data. So it's next time we will, though, confer more with both justice and municipal courts prior to the reporting to ensure that we can get as much information for you as they're able to provide.
Okay, and Mr. Bender, just a moment. One thing that we might be able to do, since they may have some legislative interest before us in the coming months, is to next time we send out this report, maybe all of us could ensure that our own municipal courts are responding. I'm sure we'd be happy to contact those entities directly to our carbon copy on your email. Representative Gorsuch and then Representative Krieger.
Well, a couple of things. I mean, it's a state law, and it's kind of shocking to me that so many could apparently ignore that. I think that's unacceptable, and I'm not blaming you. I'm blaming them. The second thing about all of this is, what would it take to make them or get them all on the same reporting system like you have with the justice courts?
We can try to look into that. Some of the municipal courts have also actually adopted the MAGIC system. But unlike the justice courts, there that would just be a small minority of the municipal courts that have done that.
Thank you.
All right. Great. Anything else?
Just have them connect their fees to the report.
There you go.
Anyone wants to hear what's
I don't think so. All right. Thank you very much, Mr. Bender, for that report. We are adjourned.
Chip Hose's overall budget.
Court, we are adjourned.